Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Swampy heat and record-breaking temperatures this summer have brought a swarm of additional insects to our backyards. Some say they're creepy crawly, but bugs can also be educational and fun. Mark Berman, affectionately known as the Bugman, is a biology teacher and entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises, which has brought the world of bugs and insects to libraries, schools, and summer camps since 1996. We welcome him back to the show today. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be back. I'm surprised I'm back. I thought I scared you off last time.
No, I'm tougher than that.
Good.
For our listeners, if you have a good bug story, everyone has a good bug story, give us a call and tell us your bug story. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you have a question or comment from Mark Berman, you're welcome to post those on Facebook as well. Just go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So, Mark Berman, you wrote earlier this year in one of your blog postings on your website, probably just before spring it was, that you couldn't wait to see what the world had in store for bug lovers this year. And I thought, I wondered, so what kind of year has it been?
Well, it started off with a very strange winter because we never had like a really hard freeze this winter. And it's one of the first winters that's been as historically warm as it was all winter. And that changes things for the bugs. It changes things for all the plants and animals. And so going into the spring and summer, the idea was that you couldn't really predict what was going to happen because some bugs like mosquitoes whose habitats didn't get frozen solid should get a leg up and have a lot more eggs and larvae that survive the winter. And so maybe it's going to be a horrible year for mosquitoes, except for their predators were experiencing the same thing. So maybe there would be more mosquito predators and there wouldn't be as many mosquitoes. And it's very hard to tell when something that unusual, a winter like that happens, what the result's going to be. And it seems like it has been superseded by this incredible drought that this part of the country has been. And when you said swampy heat, it hasn't really been swampy heat. It's been humid heat, but it's been very, very dry.
Okay.
And I mean,
that's a good distinction.
Yeah. And you hear about all the corn problems that everybody's having now and how it's going to affect food prices and things. Well, it affects plants and animals, too. And it's funny because mosquitoes are one of the first things that I think of since they live in water. And when I think of freezing winter or not freezing winter, I think, well, what's going to happen to the mosquitoes? And that's also what I did my graduate research on, was mosquitoes. And we used to go around and dig in old discarded tires that get puddles in them. And that's a major breeding site for a lot of species of mosquitoes. And actually, my professor from when I was in grad school was just in town last week looking for mosquitoes. He's on a big loop around this part of the country to census the different populations of mosquitoes around the country. And he struck out almost everywhere he went because there's no water almost anywhere. And so all of the speculation about what the winter would do has kind of gotten obliterated by the fact that we've just had such a dry summer so far. And so I don't know what the winter did.
And that goes, I mean, it's not just mosquitoes. If mosquitoes aren't around, then whatever feeds on mosquitoes.
Right.
Does the drought bring out other bugs that would not normally be out necessarily, by any chance?
Possibly. Most especially arthropods and animals like that are real sensitive to moisture, and drying out is a real big issue. So you're more likely to get more unusual things showing up when it gets real wet, probably, than when it gets real dry. But it could happen, but I'm not exactly sure. It's just so, the weather has just been so wacky the last couple of years. It's really hard to sort of predict what the effects are going to be in any certain, since mosquitoes come and go, I mean, since insects in general come and go so quickly, they can have such huge populations and then they can crash so quickly. It's really difficult to sort of predict what's going to happen. It's just fun to go out and see what's going on.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. They go to schools and camps and different functions to teach people about bugs.
And tomorrow is our last big library program of the summer.
Where's that at?
Tomorrow is at Westland Branch Library of the Southwest Libraries out on West Broad Street.
Okay.
And it's our big family program, and it's really fun. And it includes Bugovision, which is something we're working into our school assemblies for this coming school year. And that involves taking an animal like this millipede on your desk and having our big, huge close-up camera, show it really big on a gigantic screen, and it's much more impressive like that than even sitting on your desk. And so tomorrow at the library, though, we've had, with the Columbus Public Libraries and with some of the outskirt libraries, we've had an incredible summer reading summer of library programs. Very fun, and tomorrow's your last chance for this summer.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, and hey, Mark. I just wanted to tell you guys about our experience. We hired Mark to do our son's birthday party. I don't know, Mark, if you remember, it was at the lake house. It was at the recreational house at Antrim Lake, and I think you had just started your business because I remember you even asked us, do you think that's reasonable? When you told us how much it was. You said, do you think that's reasonable?
And you said it was too cheap, raise your prices, right?
I didn't think it was reasonable, and it was a great time. I remember that, and made a great impression on the kids, and it was a good activity for the kids. No, it's still got the magnet on the refrigerator. And I remember probably the tarantula made the biggest impression on everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember that you had some stick bugs that seemed enormous to me. They were maybe 5-6 inches long, I think. I don't know, but it's been a long time. But
yeah, those were Vietnamese stick bugs, and they're very cool and an interesting example of an herbivore because they're, I don't know if we showed you at the party, because their eyes go sideways. And so they're one of my favorite bugs to show how you can tell an animal that eats plants because their eyes go sideways. And they're also really fun.
Yeah, I found that the most interesting. Most people were taken by the tarantula, and I think at that day you had some really tiny mantises you had just found in your yard too, and those were pretty cool little tiny praying mantises.
But, oh yeah,
it was a great experience. I don't know if you remember that or not. I think it would have been one of your first demonstrations that you did commercially. It was a good experience, and Noah still has the magnet. And,
okay.
Still remembers it.
Well, thanks for calling. And say hi to Noah, too.
Thanks, Steve.
I will. Thanks.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mark in Lincoln Village, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Ann.
You're welcome.
I got big questions about the bed bugs. I know that they get in your house, and I've heard that you heat the house up with heaters to 140 degrees. Some guy burned his house down doing that.
Do you have bed bugs, Mark?
No, thank God.
Yeah.
But I am going to be taking a vacation and going to hotels. They have things at bug stores to kill them. And do you have to throw away your mattresses and carpet? Or
let's see. Mark Berman, what do you think?
Well, this summer and actually last summer have been, bed bugs have been sort of the big sexy bug pest news in all
of
the...
I don't know how sexy is a strong word.
Well, sexy because it makes the front page all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's the big news. And so bed bugs can be a huge problem. They're usually not. And if you go to a hotel room and come back and you notice that you've got bites on your body or something like that, and you think that either the hotel had bed bugs, or especially if you think you brought them back and you think you have them in your house, there are very drastic measures you can take. But there's also much more simple common sense measures you can take. During the daytime, they go down to the base of the bed, the feet of the bed, and in the carpet along the walls, especially between like the joint between the walls and the carpet.
Uh-huh.
And the best thing to do about it is bleach all the sheets and vacuum everything really well a couple of times. Do it over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. Tear everything down, vacuum it all, bleach all the sheets. And when you vacuum it, get rid of the vacuum bag because it doesn't kill them when it sucks them up, and they'll come back out again. And so, and if you do stuff like that, they're not that big of a deal. I have a big thing about putting poisons around your house when you can avoid it. A lot of the pesticide modes of action function on the bugs in very similar ways that they would function on us if we had that kind of dosage. And so even though we don't get huge doses, if you have a little bit of poison around your house, I think that's worse than bed bugs.
What about the heat idea?
The heat idea is interesting. Yeah, and it's expensive, and you move out, and you got to make sure you get all the candles out first before you do that. And it's drastic. And I've heard of that being done for termites more than bed bugs. And around here, because usually we have such big winters, termites aren't such a big problem. But if you go out west or to Hawaii or places like that, there are pest control companies who will move you out of your house into a hotel for like a week, and they'll put a big, huge tent over your house and then flood it with pesticide or heat it or do whatever treatment they have while everybody's gone, and you put all the dishes away and you get everything out of the way. And I mean, they completely treat the house. And I think that's a little bit extreme for bed bugs. I've never heard of a case of bed bugs where you have to go to that big of an extreme. But I imagine it, you know, it costs a lot of money. And so the pest control...
You don't think getting rid of the mattress is...
rarely. You know, one time we had a dog that had fleas real bad, and we ended up having to throw a chair away. But fleas are a lot worse than in terms of big reproductive numbers and being a real nuisance than bed bugs are. Bed bugs are easier to manage because they're located into the bed, so they're kind of in one predictable place, and because you can usually clearly see evidence of them, they'll be spotting on the bed, or they'll actually drops of blood, and sometimes you'll see old bodies and things laying around. I know it's disgusting, but everybody's got to live, you know. but really, sort of more mechanical and less chemical measures are, I think, more appropriate for bed bugs. You would have to be in real bad shape to throw away the mattress. If the mattress had a split in it and you thought they got in there and were infesting the inside of the mattress, maybe, but most mattresses that are intact, they're going to go in the crevices of the mattress seams, and they're going to go down. And especially, I mean, they come out, excuse me, I got to manage this. They come out to feed at night. And so in the daytime, they go down on the floor and down in the, excuse me, down in the crevices in a wood floor or underneath rugs, or especially the corners between the wall and the floor. And usually a real good vacuuming and some bleach on the sheets will take care of it, especially if it's a new infestation. So if you go out of town and you bring them back from a hotel and you start noticing them, do it right away and be really aggressive about it, just in terms of washing everything and vacuuming everything, and they should be okay. They're not as big of a problem
doctor.
As... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark?
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Have a fun trip.
Yeah, have a great time.
By the way, I'm getting ready to go on a trip, too, that's very exciting because on Saturday I leave for Arizona. And every year in Arizona, in southern Arizona, the first week in August, right when the monsoons in the desert start, they have the Invertebrates in Education and Conservation Conference, which is professionals from all over the world who work in zoos and museums and people who exhibit bugs and people who raise them and run the butterfly farms, like at the Franklin Park Conservatory, mm-hmm. when they get their butterflies. So people who run those butterfly farms come out and give talks and roundtables on how they ship thousands of pupae every year to go out to all these butterfly houses. And also you go out in the desert and collect with these people who know so much about the desert and collecting in the desert. And it's just such a fascinating time. And the southern Arizona desert is so beautiful this time of year. And I think we're going up to the Grand Canyon, too. Oh. And so we're going to do a whole bunch of really cool bug stuff coming up at the end of the month, at the end of the week. And I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Mm-hmm. Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team.
Early morning freight trains are common in north side neighborhoods that skirt the state fairgrounds. Today, 11 cars of a Norfolk Southern train derailed. Two tanker cars filled with ethanol exploded and burned.
It just kind of like consumed the sky.
Heard screeching. Then I heard a sound like a boom, and then I went and looked outside.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and when you support our station at the annual level of $85, our gift to you is the WOSU Public Media Member Card. The Member Card is good for dining and admission discounts at more than 300 Member Card partners in and around Central Ohio. Save money and support 89.7 NPR News with the WOSU Member Card. Make a gift of $85 or more. Just visit us right now at WOSU.org/membercard for more information. And thank you for your support of 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Nationwide Insurance Picnic with the Pops, continuing the annual tradition for Buckeye Nation as the Columbus Symphony takes the stage with the OSU Marching Band this Friday and Saturday night at the Columbus Commons. PicnicWithThePops.com.
73 degrees in downtown Columbus, mostly sunny skies today, warming up to a high of 91. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 77 degrees. Partly sunny with a chance of showers on Thursday. Some storms could be severe, a high of 94. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
My guest this hour, Mark Berman, entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Ento Prizes. If you have a question or comment for Mark, give us a call. We're talking about bugs. What else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Phil in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A number of years ago, I heard about an old Indian legend that when you hear the first sound of a cicada in the summer, it's 100 days until the first frost. Well, being statistically oriented research type guy, I began tracking this now and then. And, you know, over the years, I've really been amazed at how close the cicada has come to the 100-day prediction. And so...
So they started early this year, and does that mean
exactly.
We're going to...
If they're correct this year, there will be a frost fairly close to my birthday, which is October 12th. Most unusual. Anyway, I'm just curious if you're aware of this legend and what you think about the accuracy of these little bugs.
Okay. Mark Berman.
I've actually never heard of that legend, but it's interesting, and I like stuff like that. And it's also amazing, and you said you did a little statistical analysis on it, which when you do a statistical analysis, it means that most of the time that's the way it's going to work out. And so it might not always work out that way, but it's amazing how accurate a lot of those sort of folklorish kind of old wives' tale kind of stories end up being. Mostly because they came from a time when people paid a lot more attention to the rhythms of nature, and we don't really do that so much anymore. We spend most of our time inside. We spend most of our time listening to the news for the weather forecast instead of putting our hands out the window, and so stories like that are interesting in a couple of ways. One, because they're usually true, but also because it speaks to a time when we were much more in tune to the world that we live in. And now we're sort of superimposed on this world and hope it doesn't get in our way too often. And so I think October 12th might be pushing it a little bit for the first frost. This might be a statistical anomalous year because it's been such a weird winter. We had such an early warm spring, but then a cooler spring, and then it's been so dry, and so it's really difficult to sort of predict. I think I might have already said that today. It's hard to predict what's going to happen. But I like the cicadas, and I like the katydids who come out at night and sort of fill the same niche at night. I like it when nature is noisy enough and big enough and in our faces enough to remind us that she's still there. And cicadas are a perfect example of that.
Well, Phil, let's keep track, okay?
And I hope I hope they're wrong this year.
Yeah, yeah, me
I do.
Too.
After all the summer, it's like, yeah, exactly. I
but
agree.
Let me know, Phil, if you
June 30th.
When you find out, let me know how it works out, because that's a good story.
Okay. Thanks. We got a little fellow walking across the table toward me here.
At break, you guys didn't hear, but at break, Ann's like, oh, you got to move him back because we're about to go back on the
yeah,
air.
Yeah, well, if you by the way, go to WOSU.org/allsides to see some bugs on the table in the studio. You can also watch us on the Ohio channel from anywhere in Ohio if you want. You can check that out. But, oh, he curled all up. He's mad.
Or offended.
And before we move on to what we're talking about, who he is, if indeed it is a he.
It is a he.
Let's stay on the topic of cicadas. Okay. They're often confused with the nighttime noises of other insects. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to cicadas, and then we're going to listen to some crickets. Cicadas first. I wouldn't have thought that was a cicada, but let's listen to the crickets now and compare.
Beautiful sound.
It is, but is that all crickets, or are there other things going on there? Because is it chirping and all that rattling and everything is crickets?
There's a bunch of different insects making that chorus. Some
okay.
field katydids and some crickets and probably some grasshoppers. And most of the crickets anyway, and we've got a whole big stack of them here, and some of them have been chirping also. Not only are those aren't all crickets, but they're almost certainly all boys. The boys make all the noise, which is always fun in a school when you say, who would have guessed the boys make all the noise? And everybody seems to think that's perfectly reasonable that the boys are making the noise. But when you make noises like that, those are for a mating call, and it's a risky business because the females aren't the only ones who can hear you. And so predators can hear you also. And a cicada has this big, loud, constant noise. And you're right. The ones around here aren't usually sort of truncated like that, where they just buzz then stop. They go more like
yeah.
But there's hundreds of different kinds of cicadas all over the world, and they make all different sorts of interesting noises that sound sort of raspy like that. The male has a couple of organs underneath his abdomen that when you look at them. In person, the ones around here, at least, they look like two little white squares that are right at the end of his legs under his abdomen. And he rubs those together, sort of like these combs, except the combs won't be... Well, here, listen, I'll rub these two combs together. And it almost sounds like... You have different size combs also, because different size teeth make different... Yeah. And so it's a little bit higher pitched than what the cicada would be. But then, and you mentioned cicadas with respect to night noises, but they usually call in the daytime. The ones that you hear at night up in the trees that go, those are katydids, and they're beautiful, big green. They look like a big green leaf. Their wings go up over their back, and they look literally like a big, huge green leaf. And you can be standing... I've tried to film these things at night, and it's frustrating because you can't locate that call because of the way it comes out of them. I've stood and with a big high power flashlight looked up in a tree for hours trying to find one of those while it was calling, and they're almost impossible to see. They're more bold because they do it at night and because they look so much like the trees. But a cricket like these little guys right here, if they think something's looking at them or there's something in the vicinity, they will shut up right away because they're totally defenseless. And I mean, you could go over and eat all those you want, you know, and mm-hmm. so they're not going to, you know, during programs, I'll be like, you know, to us, it sounds like they're going, oh, I can teach you how to do this. You ready? Can you make your tongue go? And then you go eat while you're doing it. So they go.
Oh, interesting.
And that's how they sort of do it when they rub their wings together. And to us, that's what it sounds like. But to them, it's like, hey, girls, come on over here, girls. And then sometimes you'll see the two boys. I don't know how much the kids appreciate that, but but they dance, too. And so, you know, if we weren't on the radio right now, I'd show you how they dance. But there's one right up here who's chirping. And
how can you tell he's chirping?
Because you can see his wings. I don't know if you can see him or not.
But we can't hear him, right?
You might be able to if the lid's off. These guys jump, by the way, but I won't let them jump.
I thought you weren't going to bring any jumping bugs in.
I know. I was torn because they said, bring stuff that makes noise, but bring stuff that doesn't jump.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Ento Prizes. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I have now lost track of...
What were you... Oh, I put... what did I do with them? I thought I put them up. Oh, don't worry about it. We'll find him.
Okay.
I think I put him up.
Well, whatever he is, wherever he is.
No, I'm pretty sure I put him away.
Okay. Anywhere. Really?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's all right. He'll show
up. There's a missing animal.
That's all right. He'll show up.
Okay, here we go. Anyways, bug lost in studio. Mark Berman will find
I'll find him. Don't worry.
Yeah.
That happens during programs, too. And oh, there he is, right behind your phone.
Okay, he's nestling under the phone. Why don't we tell people what that is? Then we'll get to Don's call and some others.
All right, I'm gonna get up and get him.
He is a millipede. I've learned that much. Apparently, he won't hurt me. No. He curls up like kind of like a snake. He coils like a snake a little bit. So if you're looking on television right now, Mark has him in his hands and...
That's one of his defenses is to curl up like that. And he's got this real hard shell and you can't, like if you're a bird or something, you can't bite through this hard shell. So you try to pull him open and he's really strong and it's really hard to pull him open. And if you pull too hard.
Some kind of something comes out.
He poops on you.
Okay.
And, yeah. And that is a really good defense because then you don't eat him. And then you just go to McDonald's.
Who wants to do that? Yeah, right. He has, they call it a millipede, not because there's actually 1,000 legs on him, but why?
You know why we call a million, right? Because it's 1,000,000.
Oh.
But milli means 1,000, and so I don't know why we call it a million, because we're Americans.
Because it looks like 1,000.
Yeah. Well, they have four legs on each of their body sections, and so if you pull them open and look underneath his body, you'll see that on each side there's two little legs, distinguished from a centipede because they have only one pair of legs. So they have one leg on each side on each of their body segments. And also centipedes are predators. So they're fast and a centipede that big would be very dangerous. I wouldn't take it out of its cage. But millipedes are scavengers. So they don't do anything except eat dead stuff.
What does... okay, so millipede just...
You don't need poison or weapons or anything to eat dead stuff. So they don't. So, I mean, they make a chemical secretion on their body that if you like licked it, if you were thinking of it, it would give you a sore stomach. And so after you handle them, you want to wash your hands. But otherwise, they're not. There's some millipedes that make a type of it's almost like a cyanide that entomologists out in the field. You know how entomologists who go to collect will take a killing jar that's got chemicals on like some plaster of Paris on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And if their killing jar runs out, you can put a millipede in it and it'll act like a killing jar too. And you can put other insects in there to kill them. And I'm not necessarily a big advocate of killing bugs, except they make a whole bunch of them. And the way you can study them and bring them to the public, you can't take everybody to the Amazon rainforest, but you can bring little parts of it here and they won't even notice the bugs.
And he's from the Amazon?
Now, this one is, I got it from a supply company that said they were South American. And a few years back, there was a huge market of giant African millipedes that looked just like this. And they were real easy to get, and they were all over the place. And then they either stopped exporting them out of Africa or stopped importing them from Africa. And I'm not sure who did what, but they got impossible to get. And a millipede like that I used to be able to get for under $20 now costs about $80 for my prices.
How long have you had this one?
This one, it's a good story because I've had this one for a couple years. Once they ran out in the market and you couldn't get them anymore, I got two girls and a boy. And the girls have since passed, and I was hoping that they would make babies, and I don't know if they have, but they go real slowly, so it's hard to tell. Huh. And so he's the one that's left, but I never took him out to programs because I just wanted him to, you know, I have Frank Sinatra music going and candles
and
stuff.
He's an interesting,
he's a very interesting specimen
yes. there, very interesting
one
bug.
One of our more popular program bugs.
Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Don.
How do you do? I was wondering about the disappearance of bugs, but apparently I'm only allowed to ask that one. But I was interested in knowing if you'd seen anything that looks to me like a small, I call it a dollar bill moth. It has the coloration of a dollar bill, that kind of a gray-green, and it has the engraving lines like a dollar bill, where they're next to each other and they kind of swirl, just like a dollar bill's engraving lines would do.
Is it sort of shell-shaped?
It's small. It's definitely smaller than your thumbnail or fingernails even, I guess. It's a pretty small little guy. I saw him down in the southern part of Ohio in Aberdeen.
It's without being able to see it, it's always hard to identify it, but it sounds like it's a kind of geometrid moth, which they sort of fan their wings flat and almost look sort of like a half a clamshell and usually have really intricate designs and
right.
lines that go along with each other on their wings, and their babies are the caterpillars are like inchworms, and so I don't know, but I hear a lot of stories about why don't you ever see any praying mantises anymore, and I used to see them all the time when I was a kid, and my answer is
you can find them in barberry bushes.
What, the moths or praying mantises?
Praying mantises.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can find them a whole lot of places if you're out there, but most of the people who say, I used to see them when I was a kid and I don't see them anymore, are sitting at a desk all day, and mm-hmm. they aren't. And praying mantises don't usually show up at a desk mm-hmm. unless I bring them. And so I don't. If you still go out a lot in the field and don't see this moth anymore, it could be coincidence, and it could be just, it's probably more coincidence than anything. Most of the bugs that sort of get lost over time are lost to habitat destruction more than anything. And so sort of a single extinction or a single event concerning, you know, the loss of a whole bunch of one particular insect is kind of rare unless there's a focused treatment on it. It would usually be a community whose habitat is being destroyed.
If I could ask, do you know about Luna moths and also little gold bugs that look like ladybugs?
Oh, those little gold bugs are so cool. Those are called tortoiseshell beetles, and they usually feed on some kind of vining like a morning glory plant. And if you sound like you've seen them before, so I don't have to tell you how spectacular they are.
A long time ago.
Yeah, well, they're still around, I promise you that. And the interesting thing is that if you hold them in your hand or stress them in some way, they turn red like a ladybug. And so if you find one and you get all excited and you go to show your best friend and you say, look at this gold bug, and they're like, that's just a ladybug. That doesn't look like anything that special. But
they have dots, right?
I beg your pardon?
The gold bugs never have dots, right? The ladybugs have dots.
Right. But there are some ladybugs that don't have dots, or ladybug-ish things that don't have dots also. But those gold bugs are really beautiful. And their larvae are really cool, too, because their larvae look like little, I don't even know how to describe it. They're flat with, they look like little Christmas tree spikes around sort of oval-shaped gray bodies. But then when they shed their skin, they have these two hairs at the end of their skin that collect the skin on top of them, and they look like a little piece of bird poop. And so they use old pieces of plant and old skin to cover themselves up and camouflage them so they can't be seen.
Are ladybugs being threatened by the or ladybugs and gold bugs being threatened by the European ladybug that's so prevalent?
I don't know if they're being threatened or not, because there's lots of aphids and food to get. Well, and the gold bugs don't eat the same food. And so I don't think they're being threatened. But the Asian ladybugs that you're talking about have much different behaviors and impact on humans a lot more than they impact on the other bugs around here, because they get in people's houses and stuff.
Thanks a lot, Tom, for the call. We appreciate it. My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Ento Prizes. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and a discussion of drought devastation in central Ohio and across the country. Join us for a discussion of the drought throughout the Midwest from 11 till noon here on 89.7 NPR News. 73 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high near 91. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 77 degrees. Partly sunny on Thursday, there is a chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm. Some of those storms could be severe after 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, a high of 94. Expect showers and thunderstorms Thursday night, a low of 70. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Mark Berman. He's an entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. He travels to schools and libraries and camps to teach people, mainly children, but in this case, us. All of us.
All the adults.
Anyone.
All the callers have been adults.
I know.
And actually, my friend Michelle and I are starting a series of adult workshops with bugs. One of them is about spiders that you should definitely come and attend. But there'll be three-hour adult workshops. And we're also, by the way, since I'm thinking about it, starting a series of eco-tours. And so I think maybe last time I was here, we talked about the synchronous fireflies in Tennessee. I don't know if we talked about those or not.
Yeah, but we did.
The best story, by the way, from Tennessee was the bear poop with the dung beetles. And so the most fun I've had in 16 years of doing bug programs was the 20-minute story about bear poop and the beetles that eat them. And the great – these are some of them over here.
Dung beetles. That's D-E-N-G-E?
D-U-N-G.
D-U-N-G.
D-U-N-G, which is another name for poop, and some people think it's a better... Some people think defecation or feces or... There's other words for poop. I figure it's all the same. But these little beetles roll a ball of poop, and then they'll make a ball of poop and roll it. They'll get up on their front legs and use their back legs to roll it, and they lay an egg in it, and then they bury it. And the outside of the ball of poop gets all hard and crusty, and the ground that they bury it in gets all hard and crusty, and they trap the baby in this ball of poop, and it eats out the inside of the ball of poop, and it's trapped inside this hollow ball of poop, and then it makes its pupa in the poop, and then the beetle comes out but can't get out of the ball of poop until it rains, and then the ground gets softened, and then it's spring. And then the bears are back because all winter the bears are hibernating. Uh-huh. And if there was a warm snap, they don't want the beetles to come up too early because there won't be any food. And so they track the seasons by burying these things underground. I know. It's an amazing story. And you should see the video. It's really quite exciting.
Email from Mary. Twice in a span of 3 weeks, I was horrified to find some kind of mutated bug that looks like a short grasshopper with very long legs, almost like a grass centipede. As I tried to kill it, it jumped very high. Honestly, the strangest thing I have ever seen. Found it in the basement. I am a bug lover, but this was a mutant and scary for sure. What is it? So,
it's
Mary,
a mutant.
The bug-killing bug lover.
It's a mutant, okay. No question about it.
Are you serious?
No, it sounds like... It sounds like... How would you even know if it was a mutant? I've never seen one before. I know it's a mutant, but...
Watch too many Men in Black movies.
Yeah, and the only question I have about that is if it actually jumped or if it just kind of fell off the wall when she was chasing it around and it looked like it jumped, because it sounds like it's a house centipede, which if it had a lot of long legs and it looked almost like a centipede grasshopper, that's what it sounds like to me. She didn't say a lot of legs, though.
But she described it as a grass centipede, which I guess is a cross between a grasshopper and a centipede.
Yeah, and she probably thought grasshopper because she thought it jumped. They usually won't jump, but they might fall and look like they're jumping. And they're really fast and really cool and really elegant and don't bite. And if you ever get brave enough to let one walk on your hand, they're really fun, but it takes a little bit to get used to because they go fast and they'll go everywhere. So they'll go around and they'll go up your arm and all over. And when I use those in programs, it's always fun when I have one in programs. And usually, like in a library, the kids will be sitting on the floor and the parents will be sitting in the back. And I always wish I had a mirror on my head so that the kids could see their mother's responses when I pull this thing out, because people who see them in their basement hate them. But kids don't know anything about it, and they just think it's cool, and the mothers are all back there like freaking out. And so that's probably what it was. And without a better description, I don't know any better. If they're in your basement, by the way, those are predators. And if they're in your basement, they're eating something, probably attracted to moisture in your basement. And it may or may not be a problem depending on your tolerance level and what's actually there. But that centipede, believe it or not, is one of the good guys. It won't hurt you, and it's eating things that may or may not.
The other stuff that you can't see, perhaps.
Yeah.
Email from Michelle. She says, Mark got me hooked on bugs over 6 years ago. He has such infectious passion for bugs. The very first bug I remember learning about and didn't even know was a bug is the woolly aphid. I thought they were amazing with their fluffy, waxy filaments covering their body. I went on to do some research experiments on them while in grad school, and I just want to publicly thank Mark for bringing me back to science and doing something I love.
We publicly, you're welcome.
Bela in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bela.
Yes, I just had a question about something I found out to be called a Dobson fly. I lived along the Big Darby Creek for 5 years, and for many years I never saw one, and then all of a sudden these huge things are flying around, and somebody said it was a Dobson fly, and they burrow into the side of a creek, and I want to know how often they come out. Do they hide for years and then reemerge?
No. And actually, one of the best places to see Dobson flies is at the McDonald's in West Jefferson, believe it or not. This is actually, it's been in the Dispatch before, this McDonald's, as a great place to go see big moths, because it's at the end of like a 2 mile stretch of completely dark farmland. And then there's a ravine, and then there's these huge lights that attract all sorts of flying things. And we see Dobson flies all the time. And your description was pretty good. They're really hard to describe. Except they're huge, and they've got big brownish wings. They're almost the color of these crickets. And the boys have really large mandibles or jaws that cross like a couple of swords over the front of its face. Very, very impressive.
Exactly. Are they harmful at all?
No, actually, the boys are a lot of show. The girls have the same musculature in their head, but little small mandibles that are kind of sharp, and the girls can give you a pretty good bite. And actually, standing out at that McDonald's, one time I saw one flying in the air, and I was about to grab my net, and a bat flew down and grabbed it. And then dropped it, and the bug flew off, so I'm not sure, but I'm guessing it was a girl that gave the bat a little bite. The babies of Dobson flies live in water, and they can live in water for a number of years, but the Dobson flies are around every year. The babies are called helgramites, and they're very impressive also. They look like big black centipedes, but if you look closely, they only have 6 legs, and they have real big jaws or mandibles also. And the first time I ever saw one of those was at a wildlife sanctuary I worked at in Massachusetts, when someone brought one in, said they found it attached to their dog's chin because it had grabbed onto their dog's chin. And so, no, they're not harmful, and they're very cool. And when you find some, show them to everybody, because not enough people know about those really cool bugs that live here.
All right,
Bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, you said Susan?
Yes, I did. Welcome.
Okay. There are tiny red bugs that are usually like on concrete walls, like if you're at a park or somewhere and you want to sit down and you see all these little tiny bugs. Are those harmful?
Look at how observant our listeners
are. I know
what
bugs you're talking about, though,
Susan. Everybody has such great observations about bugs. Those things are called pincushion mites, and they're actually arachnids, like spiders or scorpions or ticks. Totally harmless and really, really cool. And someday when you're out at the park and you see these things, Susan, just watch one for a little while and watch what it does during its daily life, because they have a very interesting and curious little life, but I have no idea what they do except crawl around. They're beautiful, though, and completely harmless. They won't hurt you a bit.
Elsa in Southville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Elsa.
Hi, yes, thank you. I'm calling about the strangest little caterpillar type thing that lives on tomato plants. Not every year you get them, but I think mainly like when it's a dry year. And I was told that they're really hard to find, but they're easier to find after wasps lay eggs on them, and they get these little white dots all over them, and that you should just let them go then, because when the eggs hatch, they eat the worm. The babies live on the worm, and that's what killed them. Is that an old wives' tale, or is that true?
Oh, no, that's Absolutely true, and also very cool. And the caterpillars you're talking about are called hornworms, tomato hornworms. One of the most heavily studied insects for the way hormones control metamorphosis and things, and also really beautiful, but people hate them because they're on their tomato plants. The little wasps you're talking about actually lay their eggs just underneath the skin of the caterpillar, and the baby wasps go inside the caterpillar and feed on it while it's still alive, and they eat sort of the fat bodies and the non-essential parts of the caterpillar. So the caterpillar keeps eating and growing and nourishing them, and then as soon as the wasps are old enough, they finish the caterpillar off, and then it's called a ghost caterpillar, and they burrow out of the skin, and those little white things that you see are actually the cocoons of the wasp, and little wasps will come out of those cocoons and, yes, go out and reinfest other caterpillars. So if you see a hornworm in your garden with the white cocoons on it, it is probably best to leave it there because it's raising parasites that will naturally protect your tomato plants from them. But I just think they're cool.
Thank you very much.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Elsa.
All right. Bye.
This
Bye-bye.
Is fun. Oh, I love this.
I know Mark's having the time
this
of his
is so
life.
Fun.
Diane in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning. I am an educator in Columbus City Schools. I teach kindergarten, and I love opportunities to bring people into our schools to get kids excited about nature, and we've done a partnership with the Metro Parks, but I've never had Mark, and would love to have him out at our school. We have a brand new building that's going up, and we'll be there in the fall. We're at Old Orchard Elementary. But, you know, for all educators, I'm curious what your prices are and what's available to urban educators like myself.
Boy, am I glad you asked that. Well, first of all, bugs.org, BUGS.org is where you can find us. And okay. We're actually expanding our school programs for this school year. The budgetary and curricular concerns of schools for the last, what has
yes.
it been, decade has just
yes.
made things
yes.
really challenging. And so this year we're launching a series of auditorium presentations that one of them for about an hour is $250, and then additional ones are less because, you know, the setup and everything. And we can show our bugs via video and Bugovision, which is live hugely magnified bugs up on the screen. We can show this to as large an audience as you can fit in the room, and we can be entertaining and manage well enough to handle as large a group as you can fill in the room. And we also do our regular classroom programs are about $150 for up to 30 kids for a classroom, and then there's discounts when you do three or more of those in a day. Basically, a whole day at your school is $500, and then we can sort of combine whatever sort of programming you want. But tell all your friends, because I love to talk about bugs, but I don't like to talk about business so much. And so go tell everybody for me, Diane.
Thanks,
well,
Diane.
Well, I'd be happy to. And do you have a Facebook page I could send you a message to communicate a little more with you?
Yes, thanks for asking that, too. It's Bugman Education, one word, on Facebook.
Very good. Thanks so much for that information.
Thank you.
All right,
you.
Diane. Thanks a lot for the call.
Bye.
We have a tweet from a listener. They ask, does Mark accept volunteers to intern or interns to work with him?
If enough people like Diane call, yes.
But right
at
now?
This point, yeah. Well, at this, and I mean, we've had other instructors over the years, too, who we pay. I would rather have paid people and even volunteers. I would love to do that if we had a bigger infrastructure built up. And so, as I had mentioned, some of the new initiatives we have coming up, me and my partner Michelle are putting together a whole bunch of new programs. And so, we'll have more call for that. But I even make people who work with me kind of uncomfortable when it comes to setting up programs and stuff because I want everything to go exactly the way it's supposed to go. And so, one of my liabilities has been sort of having a mindset for that sort of thing, but we're working on it. And so possibly about volunteers and interns, we're not to that point yet, but we're working towards that.
Email from Tess writes, would Mark kindly address the yearly swarm of ladybug-like critters that infest my house? They're impossible to eliminate and so annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what the gentleman before was sort of talking about, was these Asian immigrants. And amazingly, a lot of the real pest problems we have come from Asia, where the populations and the plant community structures are similar enough that they can survive well here, but they do different things here. And so those they're called Asian multicolored ladybugs, and they were originally introduced into the southern United States to address crop pest problems. And it always reminds me of the "I Know an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly" song, because you have crop pests that are imported, so you import predators to eat them, and then she swallowed a dog and she swallowed a bird and whatever. And so these particular ones, most ladybugs overwinter as adults up a hill in the woods under a piece of bark or a rock or something, and are completely innocuous to us. But then these Asian ones like to go in people's houses where it's warmer and the living is easy. And so you probably see them in the fall in huge numbers, and you probably, and I don't know you, but I'm guessing you have a white house or a light colored house that's near the top of a hill. They like to go to the top of the hill so in the spring they don't get flooded out by early rains. And they like white because on warm days they can go up and warm themselves up from the radiant heat off the white surfaces. And what you're seeing in the fall is them all responding to the same cue to go look for a place to live through the winter. So they all sort of inundate your house at once. They find wall voids. A lot of them die. And a lot of them will get in wall voids and in the attic and stuff and find nice places to hunker down. And then in the spring, they're all sort of in different places, and they get cues at different times. So you'll see them kind of leaking back out in smaller numbers, but you'll see them again in the spring, usually in the windows trying to get out. And so you're right. There's nothing you can do about them except paint your house or vacuum. Mm. And if you vacuum, you have to empty the bag because they'll come back out again. And if you want, you can freeze them instead of let them go again. They're invasive exotic bugs. So all bets are off. If you want to kill those guys, they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there's plenty of them back home where they came from. And so, you know, the rules of respect for bugs are kind of tricky because they'll have so many babies and they can so much get in our way that sometimes you do what you got to do. But there's no sort of chemical treatment or any sort of, you can't make the house real hot and get rid of them. You just have to deal with them mechanically. Get a vacuum cleaner. That's the best thing to do.
Well, Mark Berman learned a lot today. Thanks for joining us.
Done again?
It's all over with. But it sounds like things change in the fall and winter, so maybe you'll come back and join us.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay, great. Mark Berman, he's entomologist and founder of Bugman Educational Enterprises. You can find him on bugman.org if you want to learn more about the organization.
Bugs.org.
Bugs.org.
Right.
Bugs.org. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.